It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important story.
Out here in Colorado, we had a sex education bill that was passed. It was signed by the governor and put into law. I just can't believe what is happening to public education.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
We are now using policy that if you don't affirm something, that they use policy then to take away your businesses.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Kids are just being bombarded with darkness.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
You know, we need to get back to letting our kids be kids.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Welcome to the show. Hey, I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MUNSON.com. You can sign up for our weekly newsletter, which I would highly recommend. That's the first look at the upcoming guests for the next week, as well as our op-eds, our guest op-eds, and our new podcast, Sounding Off with Kim Munson. So be sure and sign up for that. Go over to Facebook and give us a like, and you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Another great show planned for you today in studio. With me is Jace McBride, Presidential Wealth Management. You're looking very dapper today.
Well, Jason thank McBride. You. Steve has given me a hard time about my shirt, but, you know, it's summer.
It's festive. It is right. It is kind of an aloha shirt, right, Steve?
You don't often see a battery-operated shirt.
Ooh. So Jason's in studio. We'll talk about some important things regarding your economic well-being in the third and fourth segment. Second segment, John Kellner. He is the candidate for district attorney, and that would be for Arapahoe, Douglas, Elbert, and Lincoln counties. And my friends, we are seeing how important these DA races are. The George Soros, Bernie Sanders funded DAs. We see what's happening in these cities across the United States, particularly what happened to that couple in St. Louis that was actually just protecting their property. And so these races are super important. So we'll talk with John Kellner in the second segment. But let's jump in here on a few things. As you know, we look at all of these things as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And also now with the COVID-19 Wuhan virus reaction disruption, it's freedom versus fear, fear versus freedom. Socialism ultimately comes down to force, and it is never compassionate to take other people's rights, their property, their freedom, or their livelihood via force, whether with a weapon, policy, unpredictable and excessive taxation, or fear. If something is a good idea, you shouldn't have to force people to implement it.
Or scare them.
Or scare them. That's right, Jason McBride.
Amen.
And there's a lot of scaring going on out there. So so look at these, you know, put on your thinking caps. A lot of people, I don't think, have been using their thinking caps lately. And Rudyard Kipling, the author of The Jungle Book, he was born in 1865. He died in 1936. He said, we need to ask these questions. What, why, when, how, where, and who? And that is kind of the bedrock of critical thinking. So let's jump in here regarding our quote for today. It's Thomas Jefferson, his first inaugural address. And you know Thomas Jefferson. He was an American statesman, diplomat, lawyer, architect, philosopher, and founding father who served as the third president of the United States. He had served as the second vice president of the United States. He was the principal author of the Declaration of Independence. He was a proponent of democracy, republicanism, and individual rights, motivating American colonists to break from the Kingdom of Great Britain and form a new nation. And he produced formative documents and decisions at both the state and national level. And this is what he said. It is proper you should understand what I deem the essential principles of our government. Equal and exact justice to all men of whatever persuasion, religious or political. And so that means that there's not special rights. We work towards equal rights, that we are all equal under the law. And that was Thomas Jefferson in his first inaugural address in 1801. Any comments on that, Mr. Steve or Mr. Jason?
Jefferson, didn't he have a chain of high schools around the country? That's a joke. I mean, I don't want to be guilty of not taking it serious, but every city in the country has a Thomas Jefferson High School. I'm sorry. That's where my twisted thinking took me. Jason?
I was a little slow on the uptake on that, Steve. So, Jason, yeah. Your thoughts?
Well, they have a Thomas Jefferson High School, at least for now, until they change the name.
True that.
Excellent point.
True that. True that. So we're going to jump into some headlines. First thing, Steve, I think let's, you and I always have a conversation when I'm headed into the studio, and I say, what's on your radar? And you've got something that's pretty interesting that's on your radar. So set that up, Producer Steve.
Apparently, things are a little too quiet in Denver for the Antifa crowd, so they went north yesterday up to Berthoud, and they were warmly, I'm doing air quotes here, received by the locals on horseback. Literally, on the streets of Berthoud, they were intercepted. And we've seen the video. We were watching it a little while ago. I watched all of it yesterday because I was just dumbfounded at the response. And I think I told you this earlier. When they are met, you know, they expect to be in the intimidators. But when they are intimidated, which if you've ever stood on the same street as a horse looking up, and you know, when you're surrounded by it, what appeared to be a dozen horses, they were the intimidatees. And it was rather comical to watch the look in their face, those who were not wearing a mask. And certainly the crowd gave them a very warm welcome.
A warm welcome right out of town. And you know what? When... you know, we need to meet this this head on. And I watched the video. You had it teed up for us when we came in, and it really warmed my heart. So that was you know, if you're coming to this town to create trouble, you might as well just keep on moving right on through. So
I'd love to think that video would go viral, that other people around the nation would be saying, hey, people can stand up to these jokers.
Yes. And, I find it most inspirational. So I forgot to say thank you. And, you know, it's always important to say thank you to the team. And that's Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie. And to each of you listeners, I appreciate each of you immensely as well. We're going to jump into some headlines here in the mini pages that we have. The first one, Colorado Governor Polis. He sets his demands for the next U.S. virus aid package. On Tuesday, he urged Congress to deliver uninterrupted benefits for the growing ranks of people without jobs. Now, just a question. Why are there a lot of people in Colorado without jobs? Did somebody, like, close down the economy here? Would that not be Governor Polis? So instead of going to the taxpayers and going to the feds, how about we get our state totally back, opened back up, and that would actually be a great economic stimulus for Colorado. But he also wants cash support. Notice that word, Jason McBride, cash. Cash means that there's not much accountability. So he wants cash support for state virus testing and contact tracing, along with billions of dollars to backfill long-term losses in state and local government budgets. You know, what I think needs to happen is that the state and local government budgets, they may have to tighten their belt, Jason McBride.
Well, we may have to have a few less bike lanes here in Colorado to take care of that. But honestly, I think enough is enough with the stimulus for the most part. The debt's skyrocketing, and there's all kinds of cases reported where people are making more money staying home than they were when they were working. So what's the incentive to go back to work? So at this point, I completely agree with you, Kim. The answer is to get the economy open. There's certainly ways to do it and still satisfy the alarmists by being safe, in quotes, air quotes again, and that will solve the problem a heck of a lot faster than free government cheese.
Well, and the other thing is, and the Democrats are fighting this tooth and nail, but how about a payroll tax holiday? That would put more money in people's pockets. It would the employer would have more money in their pockets, and it would encourage people to get back to work. So I think that's really something that they should consider, Jason McBride.
Yeah, I don't see why they're so dead set against it. There seem to be many, many that are dead set against it. I know Trump is for it. I definitely think it would be an incremental help at least with getting people to come back, and it would certainly encourage the employer to encourage the employees to come back to work, if nothing else, that's for sure.
So the other thing, Polis, he warned of dire consequences to the economic welfare of millions of Coloradans and to the state's ability to contain the pandemic, or the spam, what is it, the spandemic, in a letter sent to the state's congressional delegation. And once again, this needs to be laid right at Governor Polis's feet. He could get this economy opened up, and it would help the economic welfare of these millions of Coloradans that he's talking about. The next headline I wanted to just mention is that Republican lawmakers in Colorado are calling for a special legislative session to fund homeschooling options. They are asking to redirect state money from schools and instead give it to families so that they can hire teachers and buy educational materials to support learning from home. In a letter signed by the entire Republican delegation, lawmakers asked Governor Jared Polis to convene a special session of the legislature to address education concerns. They also laid out a policy proposal called Safe Learning Choices that would make financial assistance available to families. The money could be used to help parents stay at home, pay teachers, support the creation of small homeschooling groups or pods, and buy devices and internet access, among other needs. I think this is brilliant. I cannot tell you how many parents I've talked with that are so concerned about their kids and their schooling. And so this seems like a really great solution. Jason, what do you think?
Well, as you know, my wife has homeschooled all three of our kids, and still does to some degree, even the ones that are now high school age. I think this is a completely wonderful idea and a fair program. You know, I'm the one that pays the bills and writes the checks in the family, and I know that homeschooling is not free. The books aren't cheap. The curriculum's not cheap. The time invested. So, you know, again, when they talk about diverting state money, the state doesn't have any money. The state has our money that we gave them, and it's
always took from us.
they took from us. I was being kind. Uh-huh. You know, and it has, as a homeschooling parent, it's always kind of stuck in my craw that I don't utilize the public school system or utilize it very, very little, and yet I still have to pay tax into it, and there's no tax write-off. You can't even take a deduction for the money you spend on materials or anything else at either a federal or a state level. So I'm all for this. This is almost a way where you could do school vouchers and school choice and have money in a backdoor roundabout way, and I'm 100% for it.
That's probably why we won't see a special session called by the governor on that. One other thing before we get to break, because we'll be talking with John Kellner here in just a moment, but I have to tell you, I told you so. This is from CBS Local, and it says, Colorado inmates sue over slave labor. They demand minimum wage, paid vacations, and paid sick leave. Says, saying they are being used as slave labor by the Colorado prison system, three current and one former inmate have filed a lawsuit against Governor Jared Polis, the state prison system, and a private prison operator. They are asking that inmates be paid minimum wage, be considered state employees, and receive the same benefits as state workers, like paid holidays and vacations, and paid sick leave and medical benefits. And this, just going down here, this was Amendment A, which was, I think, back in 2018. It changed the state constitution, and I came out in my voter's guide recommending a no vote on that because just this. I felt that this was going to open up the opportunity for prisoners to actually sue, and we're going to be the ones that will be paying the legal costs, really, on both sides on that. Well, yeah, probably, because the other thing is that trial attorneys, you know that they've got to love this. And so anyway, I have to say, I told you so, Steve. You know, I just have to tell you that.
Well, Jason, let's welcome her to, You know, tell us.
Yeah, we're right. And the only thing I'm surprised about is that it took this long for the first lawsuit to show up.
I know that. So, my friends, I will again do a voter's guide on the issues this year. And you may agree, you may disagree. I'm going to look at them, each of them, from the constitutional perspective that I have. And you can use it as a tool. And it takes a lot of time for me to put that together. But 2 years later, I'm saying I told you so. So we're going to go to break. Before we do that, though, Hooters Restaurants is one of my valued partners. It's Wednesday, so it's Wings Day for dine-in. All the wings you could eat for $15.99. They have 5 Colorado locations, Loveland, Westminster, Aurora, Lone Tree, and Colorado Springs. They're open for dine-in, to-go, delivery, and curbside service. And what a way to just kind of chill out. They have a whole bunch of TVs. We're starting to have some sports, which is great. They have happy hour specials, lunch specials. And so you can sit on the patio, chill out a little bit with all the craziness that's going on. For more information, go to order.hooters.com. That's order.hooters.com. And we'll be right back.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter. You'll get the first look at upcoming guests, our op-eds for the week, as well as our Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcasts. And we'd appreciate it if you go over to Facebook and give us a like as well. On the line with me this morning is John Kellner. He is a candidate for district attorney for Adams, Douglas, Elbert, and Lincoln counties. And my friends, these races are super important, and the veil is off on why. But I was just looking, Patty had pulled this particular headline from the Epoch Times. In New York City, shootings are up 220% from a year ago. That's 220% from a year ago. And John Kellner, one of the first things that people expect from our elected representatives is that they make sure that our communities are safe so that we can, you know, go about with our families, we can go to work, we can take our kids to soccer practice. We want our communities to be safe. So, John Kellner, it is a time for choosing this particular election cycle, and your race is a very important one.
Hey, thank you, Kim, very much for having me on again. And just a real quick correction there. It's not Adams County. It's Arapahoe County.
I know
it. The 18th is. Yep. We run right up on that border of Adams, so it happens all the time. But just so your listeners know, it's Arapahoe, Douglas, Elbert, and Lincoln counties. That's the 18th Judicial District. But to your point, Kim, I mean, the primary role of government, the thing we expect at its very core, is to provide public safety for its citizens. And that's one of the few things that only government really, we expect them to do for us. And then everything else sort of flows from that, because once they create the conditions for the rule of law, you know, create the conditions for a successful business, for, you know, safe communities for our kids to go to school. And when government abdicates that responsibility, there's chaos that ensues.
And we're seeing that playing out in many of these cities, John, throughout the country. And, you know, I think that this kind of unrest has been percolating underneath the surface. But we now see a clear choice this next election cycle. And the choice is chaos and destruction and defacing property, or peaceful communities. And I think that, you know, we want order. You have to have order in order to have peaceful communities. And so the choices are becoming just so laser focused on what the choice is going to be this November, John Kellner. And in your particular race, very interesting, it looks like your opponent is getting a bunch of money and some of this Bernie Sanders money. And so tell us a little bit about that.
Well, sure, Kim. And you're right, as she is getting supported by a lot of out-state money. Here's my opponent, after she was endorsed by Bernie Sanders in early June, pulled in maybe a little over $20,000 just from out-of-state donations. And to put that into context for a DA race, I mean, district attorney races are relatively sleepy affairs and have been in the past. Things have started to change, I think, since the last election cycle when Mr. Soros put about $1 million into trying to unseat Pete Weir, the Republican district attorney in Jefferson County. We started to see some increased, not just interest in these races, but a lot of cash flow coming in from out-of-state entities trying to sway our local public races. So my opponent was endorsed by Bernie and has seen a significant uptick in, to the tune of really thousands of small donors from out-of-state. And you know, when I talk to people about that, they're generally upset because when you're talking about a local race, that is somebody going to have real impact on decisions that affect your public safety or maybe your kid's safety or your school safety. They don't like the idea that there's a lot of money coming from out of the state to influence those very local personal decisions.
Well, and we're seeing this play out here in the metropolitan area. There was a lot of shenanigans going on in Aurora this last weekend. What can you tell us about that, John Kellner?
Well, there are folks in Aurora protesting the Elijah McClain case. And to kind of go back to something you had mentioned earlier, that's Adams County. So that's the 17th Judicial District. A lot of folks don't know that Aurora transcends actually three different county lines. It's a pretty big city that goes into parts of Adams, part of Arapahoe, or mostly Arapahoe, and then even part of Douglas County. So the Elijah McClain case, he died in the custody of some law enforcement officers from the Aurora Police Department, and the Democrat district attorney in the 17th Judicial District determined that no charges would be filed. Now, folks have been making their voices heard that they don't like that decision, that they disagree with the actions of the police officers. So there's been a lot of peaceful demonstrations. And as a district attorney, I have no qualms whatsoever with that. I completely respect people's rights to peacefully protest. After a peaceful protest, later that night, the City of Aurora Municipal Government Center, things turned far from a peaceful protest. And I think anytime that happens, it tends to hijack the message of the legitimate protesters. But what folks were doing there, dressed in black with face masks, helmets and things on, they started tearing down the wood barriers that block all the windows into the municipal center. And we're talking about the municipal center that handles or houses the courthouse for Aurora. Smashed at least 16 windows that I saw. I mean, really big, throwing fireworks inside the windows, trying to start fires. And that's a sort of behavior, potential rioting, obviously vandalism, that we can't tolerate as a society. And when you do tolerate things like that happening, what you see is an emboldening. An emboldening that, okay, mm-hmm. we'll keep doing it. And I think you see that at the Capitol, right, where mm-hmm. there's defacing a public property, spray painting the public property, and officials saying, we're not going to do anything about it. And maybe they'll go away. Maybe they'll just stop or get it out of their system. But that's not what happens. It keeps happening at the Capitol, right? The defacing continues over and over again.
Well, and to your point, to not take a stand, when I was on city council, I remember the city manager saying that once a piece of property is tagged or it has graffiti on it, you need to get that cleaned up immediately because it just builds on itself. And so it emboldens those that want to deface property. You know, John Kellner, back a long time ago, it was for Martin Luther King Jr., you know, there's always the parade. And I have walked with my friend Casper Stockham the last few years. And we actually had some young, and they were primarily white kids. They were dressed in black. Probably Antifa, that were kind of walking along beside us, kind of, just kind of poking us a little bit, you know. And I thought it was so interesting. And there was this one young woman that I made eye contact with, and she was just, it looked like she almost hated me. I mean, it was just the weirdest thing, but I continued to, you know, make eye contact with her, and eventually she just moved on. But interestingly enough, these kids were Bernie supporters. And somebody said, well, how do you know they were Bernie supporters? It's like, well, they had Bernie water bottles. And so I think I'm trying to make this correlation here between these Bernie supporters are many of these young kids that are out there that are creating trouble, defacing property. And then let's go to your opponent has been endorsed by Bernie Sanders and is receiving outside money. And so if you like destruction and defacing property, then it seems that people would vote for your opponent. But if you want safe communities and you want, to be able to live your life, you know, conduct your business, have your kids go to school, then it seems to me like you would be the candidate to vote for, John Kellner.
I think this race is going to be about experience. I've been a prosecutor for a long time, first as a prosecutor in the Marine Corps. I deployed overseas to places like Afghanistan to actually promote the rule of law. And once I came back and I started this job being a state prosecutor, I've been recognized as the prosecutor of the year for the entire state of Colorado for my work on cold cases. In fact, I was just in court yesterday. I continue to do this job, outside of campaigning. When I'm not doing my day job of being a prosecutor, I'm representing the people. And so I was just in court yesterday on a 1984 triple homicide out of Aurora, a cold case that we've been working on for years to try and solve and bring an offender to justice. And so that's my background. On the other side, I've seen my opponent say things like she wants to reallocate money away from the police. Now, that's a fancy way of saying defund the police. Uh-huh. That's not somebody that, in my experience, you can trust with decisions about public safety and law and order. And put a finer point on it, my opponent's never even successfully prosecuted a single felony case in Colorado State Court. We charge about 5,500 felonies a year in the 18 judicial district. This serves about 1.1 plus million people in our district. It's pretty big. And the person that wants to take the helm of that has never even successfully prosecuted a single one of those cases. That's not somebody that, if God forbid you or a loved one, is a victim of a crime, that you want to see that person across the table and you want to believe that when they tell you, I can seek justice for you, I care about you in this case, that you believe them. And with my opponent's lack of experience, I don't think she can make that same promise that I can.
Okay. Jason McBride, you have a comment.
Well, I had just a quick question for John. Hi, John. Good morning. So I hypothetically, you're the DA, let's say, and you get a case landed in front of you of a person that's been arrested for creating this kind of vandalism. They're caught breaking windows, throwing fireworks inside of a building, trying to start it on fire. That case lands in front of you. What kind of charges and sentencing are you going to go for?
Okay, so love hypotheticals, especially in law school. We're talking about real people and real lives. You got to be real cautious about that because the things that govern a prosecutor are always going to be facts and law. So what are the facts I can prove beyond a reasonable doubt to a jury and not just the things I assume I think I know? So you're kind of taking your hypothetical on its face. You know, you got somebody caught red-handed, breaking windows, throwing fireworks inside, trying to start a fire. If they're involved in a riot, and there's a specific legal definition for that, so you could talk about things like criminal mischief for vandalism, things like arson, things like rioting. But talking about sentencing, you know, that ranges so much and has so much to do with who that person is, what their background experience is, the potential for rehabilitation. So I wish I could give you a short, simple answer, but being a prosecutor is complex. You got to take all those things into account.
Well, John Kellner, this is such an important race. How can people help you and get more information about you?
Oh, thanks, Kim. Yeah, I appreciate all the support I get from your listeners. I really do. After I hang up on these things, I usually get a lot of visitors to come to our website at www.johnkellner.com. That's JohnKellner.com. Please sign up to volunteer to help out. Make calls, walk your neighborhood, any of those things. We appreciate the support.
And again, this would encompass Arapahoe, Douglas, Elbert, and Lincoln counties. That is your judicial district, correct?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Thanks so much, John. We'll talk to you here again in a few weeks and appreciate you stepping forward.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Okay. We're going to go to break. In studio with me is Jason McBride. We'll talk about some things regarding your economic well-being. And depending on our time, we might go through a few other headlines as well. So Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management. We'll be right back.
Predovich & Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich & Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich & Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
Now more than ever, it is important to have independent voices bringing truth and clarity to the issues facing us, our families, our communities, our state, our nation, and our world. The Kim Munson Show is one of those important voices. Kim is a truly independent entrepreneur. She purchases her broadcast time, which gives her total freedom in production of the show and scheduling of guests. If you'd like to support The Kim Munson Show, go to her website, Kim Munson, MONSON.com, and click on the contribute button under Kim's picture. Kim greatly appreciates your help and support.
Welcome back to The Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That is KimMunson.com, MONSON.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter. That's where you get the first look at the upcoming guests, our guest op-eds. Sometimes I write an op-ed. And our Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcast. There's always some great information there as well. Thrilled to have in studio valued partner, friend, and that is Jason McBride with Presidential Wealth Management. It's great to have you here, Jason.
Well, thanks. It's always a pleasure to be here, Kim.
And that is one festive shirt. One thing about, I've got a couple of shirts like that as well, where you can be camouflaged in a flower garden.
That's true.
So a lot is happening in our world right now. And of course, you have your ear to the ground regarding people's economic well-being. And you said there's some interesting things going on, and one of the things was charitable giving here in America.
Well, it is, and I've always been of the opinion that Americans are naturally generous and like to give when they can, and sometimes even when they can't. I've seen people that are charitable to the point where they're even sacrificing things in their own life for others is very noble. The wealthy have been demonized in, pretty much going back to the Obama years, that if you've done something well and become wealthy, you should be ashamed of that, or you didn't build that. That was Obama and Warren's thing, and that these horrible millionaires and billionaires need to be punished for their success because they're all greedy and don't care about anybody but themselves. And I do tend to disagree with that. I think that Americans, both wealthy and of modest means, are generous, do want to be helpful, and are charitable. And it's interesting that this year people are being even more charitable than they were last year.
Really?
And it's interesting that even though when they changed the tax with Trump's tax act that raised the standard deduction up very high to $24,000 for a couple, you know, a lot of times that was inside of their charitable giving amount. So if they wanted to do charitable giving, they weren't getting a tax break for it anymore. And yet we've still seen charitable giving increase. So this article came from Investors Business Daily, and Fidelity Charitable, they're one of the nation's biggest donation processors, have approved more than $4 billion in charitable grant recommendations this year, and that's on pace to top the $7.2 billion granted in all of last year, which last year was a record year, by the way, and $350 million has been given in 2020 to help with coronavirus relief as well. So people are giving more this year, even in a tough economy, than they did last year, you know, when the economy was on fire and they were probably better able to afford it. So I think that says something. Another foundation, Giving USA, said donations hit almost $450 billion in 2019, which was up from 2018. So the amount of giving seems to be going up and up and up. But now, you know, foundations, corporations, you know, they give a lot, but 68% of charitable contributions, according to Giving USA, just come from individual people.
Wow.
So that, I think that says an awful lot too. So, but one thing that I did want to mention that is a kind of a special tax break this year, if you want to call it that, as I mentioned earlier, when they raised the standard deduction up to $24,000, you know, that was more than a lot of people were getting in deductions, even including their charity. So it became not a tax break to give to charity. I think these numbers tell you that people are not giving to charity just to give the tax break because they continue to give. They give freely. They're even giving more, even though there's no tax benefit for it. Well, there actually is this year, though. The CARES Act, which we've talked quite a bit about, and I wasn't aware of this, Kim. I missed this one. Maybe it was an amendment added to it or something else, but the CARES Act for this year, even if you're taking the full $24,000 standard deduction, an individual taxpayer can still get a tax deduction of up to $300 for charitable giving or $600 for a married couple. So it's not a great big amount, but it's a little bit of extra incentive on top of the standard deduction to give to charity. And I think that's pretty cool, and it's good to know.
Okay, Jason, I'm having a little trouble understanding the $24,000. So does somebody have to give $24,000 in charitable giving?
No.
Before they can write it off? Or
No, here's an example. Before, let's say someone last year that used their whole standard $24,000 deduction, just the standard deduction, and then they gave $1,000 to charity on top of that.
Okay.
They didn't get to take a tax deduction for the $1,000 because they'd already used their full standard deduction, which encompasses that. This year, that same couple, even if they use their full standard $24,000 deduction, they can give to charity and take us another $600 deduction for the charitable giving.
Okay.
Sorry if that's brain spinning. I'm probably not explaining it clearly.
No, I think it's probably just because it's kind of complicated. So the $24,000 deduction, is that?
That's standard. That's everybody just gets that.
Is that for a couple?
For a couple. So whatever your income is, you get to subtract $24,000 right off the top,
no matter what.
Okay, so that's over there. So what about if you gave $10,000 in charitable giving, you know, some to your church, some to, you know, different organizations that you think are, you know, important. So how does that work then, Jason?
Well, if you gave $10,000 in charitable contributions to your church or something that's tax deductible, you don't get to take a deduction for the whole $10,000, but you could take a deduction for $600 worth of it.
And that's it?
That's it. Well, last year you couldn't take a deduction for any of it unless you were itemizing and all kinds of things. So this is pretty much for regular middle-class taxpayers that are not itemizing, using the $24,000 standard deduction. Now, they basically, if they give to charity, let's say their standard deduction is $24,600.
Uh-huh.
So okay. It's a little extra tax break. It's not a huge one. But if it incentivizes a significant number of families to give another $600 to charity this year, that can be real helpful.
Oh, it could be across the board. So what happened within the Trump tax cuts is they increased that standard deduction. Isn't that
what's
happened?
Okay. That's right. So basically before, I don't remember the exact number to the penny, but I think a couple was able to take a standard deduction of $12,000. So if their income was $100,000, it became $88,000 automatically. $12,000, that money just disappeared and was not taxable. And then on top of the $12,000, maybe they gave $1,000 to charity, which was tax deductible. So now they're at $13,000. Well, this basically doubled the standard deduction, the Trump Tax Act, and took that $12,000 that they didn't have to count of his income, boom, right to
$24,000.
Which for most people gave them a much bigger tax break.
Sure.
I mean, there's a few cases where people were itemizing, they were already real close to the $24,000 or maybe a little bit over it, and a lot of that was charitable giving. They were not helped. They actually may have been hurt just a little bit because now some of their charitable giving was no longer tax deductible. But it was a rare case.
You know, Jason, as we're getting into the weeds on this, I think this is good, though, is when the Democrats, and I want to make it very clear, the Democrat Party of today is not the Democrat Party of JFK. It's got moved so far to the left where basically it penalizes people for working, for creating wealth. And so if a couple, instead of a $12,000 standard deduction, is getting a $24,000 standard deduction, that helps the middle class. So this narrative out here that the Trump tax cuts were for the rich is just not true.
It is so 100% false. And if you remember, Kim, probably, boy, this was, a year ago at least. You remember I came in with
the
examples of it, and it clearly showed that the tax break for the middle class and even the lower earners was substantially greater on a percentage basis than it was for the wealthy. Now, if you take into account some of the deductions that got taken away for the wealthier or the state and local tax deductions that got reduced and a lot of other deductions that got reduced. In all likelihood, the Trump tax changes probably caused the wealthy to actually pay a little bit more than they had actually increased taxes on the wealthy while substantially reducing taxes for middle-income families and even middle-income singles. So that narrative is totally false. I came on the show. I had serious examples, and I mean, it's absolutely provable by numbers.
Yeah, that's for sure. Let's go to break. This is Kim Munson. In studio with me is one of my valued partners. That's Jace McBride and all of your colleagues over at Presidential Wealth Management. We'll continue on. You won't want to miss this next conversation.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lauren Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter. You get the first look on what's going to be happening the next week, as well as our guest op-eds, sometimes an op-ed from me, and our Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcasts. Be sure and go over to Facebook and give us a like as well. We'd greatly appreciate that. In studio with me is one of my valued partners. And go to my website and see all these valued partners that I have. I highly recommend each and every one of these folks. And Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management, I do appreciate you and Presidential's partnership.
Well, thank you. We appreciate you too.
One note I wanted to make regarding our conversation from the last segment, and that is we were talking about the Trump tax cuts. But what happened down here with this Democrat House, Senate, and governor is it used to be in Colorado that you would take your taxable income, you'd get your deductions and all those things, and that would be at the bottom of your federal form.
Yep.
And then that bottom number would go over to the top and be the top number on your state income tax.
Okay.
Okay. So what happened then, because that because of the higher standard deduction that you were just talking about, that that lower number has become lower, and so over here on Colorado, you should have also gotten a tax cut there as well. But this Democrat House, Senate, and governor said, we're not going to use that bottom number. We're going to use that top number now. So in essence, you just got a tax increase, and the coffers of the state of Colorado went up because of that. Is that making sense?
It is. Now, I was not aware that they had done that.
Yes.
So in fact, if that's correct, that's a double tax increase, because let's look at a just example. Before, you know, if someone made $100,000 and got to deduct $12,88 was hitting their Colorado return
right.
to start. Under the Trump tax cuts, that 88 should have gone down to 76, but you're telling me it's now 100.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually a 25% tax increase.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, as you're mentioning that, that is kind of that double whammy on that. So anyway, we just wanted to make a point on that. But these people down at the State House, which doesn't look very good, they're not taking very good care of it. They're not taking very good care of the
people's
house.
Probably a badge of honor for most of them.
Well, I tell you what, but they have actually very subtly increased your income taxes here in Colorado. And you know what? This election, they're going to want even more. So we'll stay tuned on that. Okay, Jason McBride, what more do you have on?
Well,
on
I've got a little bit more. The CARES Act also did help out the wealthy and higher net worth and higher income to be more charitable. The CARES Act allows those who itemize their deductions on their return. So this is people that have more deductions than the $24,000. They can write off gifts to charity up to 100% of their adjusted gross income for 2020. So they can give to charity up to 100% of their AGI and basically make their income go away by going to charity. Normally, the 60% is the maximum. So the CARES Act gave incentives for the higher earners also to be more charitable, at least for 2020.
Okay. That is very interesting.
That's
so
equal rights.
That's right equal rights. There you go. So what else? I think you mentioned that there's something regarding the distributions as well, right?
Right. So another easy way to give to charity is what's called a qualified charitable distribution. This is if you have an IRA account or 401k and you've turned age 70 and a half, which that's now been changed to 72, so it's kind of confusing. But if you are at the age where you are required to take a distribution from a retirement account that is taxable, you can take that distribution and give it to charity directly out of the IRA, okay? And that income never hits your tax return. So if someone had to take $5,000 out for a required minimum distribution, and let's say their standard deduction is already, you know, they're at the $24,000, they can't get any more there. If they were to give $5,000 to charity out of their pocket, they don't get a tax break for that. They're okay. Still paying the taxes on the whole $5,000. If they took the $5,000 out of their IRA, put it in their bank account, and then wrote the check, they're still paying tax on the $5,000 because they took it out of the IRA. But if you go directly from the retirement account and give the money to a charity or charities of your choice, that $5,000 never hits your 1040, and it's a way to give to charity and get a tax break at the same time.
Okay, so let's say you are required to take this money out, but actually you could make that a non-taxable event. Am I following you correctly?
Right,
on that?
But you just have to give the money away.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's fine. Now, it gets a little weird because required minimum distributions have been suspended for 2020. You're not required to take it at all if you don't want to. Even though you're not required to take it, if you calculate the amount it would have been, you could still use this QCD to give the money to charity on a tax-free basis.
You know, Jason, I am so pleased that you stay on top of all this, but I'm sitting here thinking, government says you have to take money at a certain age. They change the age. You know, they're requiring this or requiring that. I mean, I really think we need to start walking this back. Government doesn't need to be telling us what to do with all of this.
Yeah, you know, I can understand the reason for required distributions out of retirement accounts, quite frankly, Kim.
What is it?
Well, first, we got a tax break up front when we put the money in.
Okay.
The money's been allowed to grow, you know, for 30, 40 years or more, and not a dime of tax has been paid on it.
Okay.
So when it comes out on the back end, then the government wants their taxes. Now, I think that's a deal with the devil, quite frankly, because you don't know what the tax rate's going to be when you're forced to take that money out. But it's not an unfair deal, in my opinion, but it's one of the reasons that I like Roth IRAs so much, because you pay a little bit of tax up front when you can afford it because you're working, and, you know, Roths are tax-free on the back end, and I still have my doubts that they will change that. I think that would be too big of a jump for any administration to all of a sudden say, oh, by the way, your Roth is taxable as well.
I could sure see these politicians trying to get their hands on that money, for sure.
Yeah.
So, but that's why it's so important to have professionals to sit down and talk with, you know, across the spectrum. Again, you look at all of my sponsors. These are professionals. These are people that are sitting on your side of the table with you. And that is so important, Jason McBride.
Well, it is. And, you know, when these rules are confusing enough, and then when they change them, it becomes more confusing, like when they changed the required minimum distribution start date from 70 and a half to 72. That's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
It gives us more flexibility, but there is some confusion around it. Now, the CARES Act, this is one more thing I want to talk about real quick, added a little bit more confusion to that because the CARES Act suspended RMDs for this year. You don't have to take them. Unless you want to or you need the income. But some people had already taken them out earlier in the year, you know, to get a jump start. They wanted to make sure it was done or whatever. Well, you are allowed up until the end of August to, if you took that required distribution before the CARES Act, you know, you didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
You can roll it back in all the way up to the end of August and make that distribution go away. So if you only took the money out because you were forced to and you're going to have to pay taxes on it and you don't want to this year, you can roll those required distributions back in. And it also applies to those folks who delayed their first RMD from 2019 to 2020. If they took out the 2019 one, they can also roll that back in. So for those lucky folks, they get to skip 2 years worth of required distributions. The last point I'll make on that, Kim, is you should think about maybe there's a good reason to take it out this year. If you're already going to be in a lower tax bracket because maybe your income's going to be down because of coronavirus or whatever reason, well, maybe you still want to take it and
sure.
get while the getting's good. The other thing to think about, although it makes me shudder, is if the Democrats win the election, they may raise taxes much more than they're talking about. So next year, it may be a much uglier tax situation than we have now. So again, maybe even though you don't have to take it this year, if it's a good year where your tax rate's going to be low, maybe it makes sense to go ahead and do it anyway. But now we have choices, and choices are always better than no choices at all.
Yeah, choices are a good thing. We have 1 minute left. Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management. What's kind of the final thought you'd like to leave with our listeners?
Well, I hope I've given them several thoughts here. One thought is, of course, that this stuff is confusing. A lot of people, I mean, the government doesn't send out a letter to everybody and make it apparent that all this has happened. So it's a good idea to sit down with an experienced advisor, hopefully one at Presidential Wealth Management, and discuss how some of these things may apply to your personal situation.
And Natalie will be at the switchboard at 7:30. And the phone number over there is 303-694-1600. 303-694-1600. And then we have this great landing page together as well. It is AIR, AIRpresidential.com. Jason McBride, so glad to have you here in studio.
Thanks, Kim.
Okay, and I like your shirt.
Thank you.
Our quote for today is, again, from Thomas Jefferson. And this was a note to Destutt de Tracy in 1816. He said, "The most sacred of the duties of a government is to do equal and impartial justice to all citizens." And so, my friends, today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.